This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Driving in today, I heard a little news flash about the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo. He was being taken to task by a priest there in New York City because he has a live-in mistress and he's divorced and he is pro-choice. His response through his press secretary was, "My religion is a private matter." And I think that probably will be the end of the story for the most part, because a lot of people hear that and say, yeah, I want my religion to be a private matter too. So who does the priest or the church have any business telling our politicians why they should be doing or not doing something, whether they should or should not be receiving the Lord's Supper if they're in violation of the church's teachings? It's just one aspect of how religion and our public life are in constant friction, constant tension, and constantly trying to occupy some of the same space in our lives. We're going to talk about religion and politics on this Thursday afternoon, the 24th of February. I would enjoy hearing from you on this as well. Dr. Robert Benny will be our guest. 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at @issuesetc. Dr. Robert Benny is director of the Center for Religion and Society at Roanoke College, and he's authored a new book titled Good and Bad Ways to Think About Religion and Politics. Dr. Benny, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Another
talk for a long time.
Another big news story today. The president has announced that he will not be, or his administration will not be, defending the Defense of Marriage Act. He's decided it's unconstitutional and not worthy of constitutional defense. What would be a bad way for a Christian to react to that news politically?
Well, one bad way would be to do nothing, because it seems to me that Christians have a rather large stake in the classical notion of marriage. But I think they would want to make a public argument in a more broad way. That is, marriage, as we've known it, is very important for the ongoing health of society. It'd be that kind of argument that would be the best to make in the public sphere.
You say earlier in your book that the Lutheran perspective on this, the framework that Lutheran theology provides for understanding faith and culture, faith and society, the sacred and the secular squares together, really is, at this point, largely unconsidered, and the best way to talk about religion and politics together. Why is that? What is that perspective?
Well, it's the classical way the Lutherans have talked about the two ways that God reigns in the world, through the law and the gospel, and that one shouldn't confuse the two. And issues of government and politics are decidedly in the left-hand kingdom and therefore have no redemptive characteristics. One of the main points that Lutherans make is that many of the political efforts at what you could call political messianism, trying to redeem the world through politics, are sharply criticized from a Lutheran point of view. So it seems that that is probably banal, and we're not in danger of that sort of thing happening, but we definitely are. There are always secular movements that are going to claim to redeem the world. Militant environmentalism is one of those these days that subtly, and sometimes not so subtly, claim to be redemptive.
You start by talking about two bad ways.
Right.
Of dealing with religion and politics, the first of which is separatism. And it has its variations, it has its gradations. What basically is separatism?
Well, separationism is the word I use. And what I mean by that is that people from the outside believe that the doctrine of the separation of church and state means that religion and politics should not interact in citizens or from the church through to the society. And I find that to be indispensable theologically, historically, and constitutionally. Religious people, if they're seriously religious, have a more comprehensive view of what God wills. It's not only just for your personal life, but God's will extends into all of life, and every Christian has the obligation to extend his or her beliefs outward toward the world. And therefore, in serious religion, you can't separate religion and politics. But a lot of secular people use the doctrine of the separation of church and state to argue that religion and politics should remain separate, which is not only impossible, but outrageous to suggest that, because that would mean that religious people are deprived of exercising their deepest held beliefs in political life, which is just outrageous.
You write, truth be told, most of these objections to the role of religion in political life amount to what I term selective separationism. What's that?
Well, if you look closely at the books, there's a whole bunch of books written sometimes by religious people, mostly by secularists, protesting religious influence in politics. And if you look carefully at them, they've all emerged after conservatives have found their political voice, as it were, or conservative religion has found its political voice. Evangelicals, fundamentalists, conservative Protestants have become politically active, and they actually have some influence in politics, serious influence in politics. And this is alarming to secular people, generally on the left. So if religion can, or church organization, religion affects things in a liberal direction, they don't object to that, and haven't object for years and years, because the mainstream Protestant organizations have been very active politically to the left, and you never have found these books criticizing them. But now that evangelicals and conservative Protestants and fundamentalists have awakened to their political voice, then you get this whole spate of books objecting to the mixing of religion and politics. So they only want certain kinds of religion distant from politics. It's conservative religion they're worried about.
You hinted at this a moment ago. Not only is it completely impractical to separate religion and politics entirely, but you say it also runs counter to the spirit and the letter of the U.S. Constitution. What do you mean?
Well, definitely. I mean the First Amendment, which guarantees the free exercise of religion. That means not only that you can believe what you wish and gather into religious communities, but you can express your beliefs and your moral commitments publicly. That's what the exercise of religion is all about. And historically, America is just full of those examples of religious people banding together, sometimes in voluntary organizations, sometimes in the church, to affect public policy. So, for example, the abolition movement couldn't have happened without Christians involved in politics. The civil rights movement couldn't have happened without those sorts of things. So the Great Awakening stimulated the revolution. So you have all sorts of examples of religion affecting political life. So, and that's guaranteed constitutionally, and it's historically the story of America.
Are there also theological reasons why separatism doesn't work?
The ones I talked about a little bit before. Christianity has a vision of life that's comprehensive, in which we believe that God is sovereign over all, and he's given us some clues about what he wishes, what he commands, and what he wills. The Ten Commandments are a good summary of those. And so when Christians look out on the world, they want that world to be following the kind of moral structure that God is moving toward with his will. And so they have an obligation not to withdraw from that, but to engage in that so that a higher standard and practice of morality occurs in the world. God did not abandon the world. He established the state to maintain an order and a certain kind of level of moral order. And Christians as citizens and as Christians should be concerned about that and active about that.
Another bad way of dealing with the religion and politics, you say, is fusionism. What's that?
Well, fusionism is where you actually fuse a religious vision, the core of religious commitments, with a particular political ideology. Perhaps the best example in the world today is Islam, where there isn't any distinction whatever between fundamental religious convictions and political directives or political policy. It's all woven together, and that's what's scary about some forms of Islam that want Sharia law imposed upon people. Now, in the Christian tradition, there's always a distinction between the church and the society, or the church and politics. And sometimes churches get too wedded to a particular political ideology, and then they lose their claim for transcendent truth and are viewed as just one more political interest group. Liberal Protestantism has become so interwoven with secular liberal thought that some people just dismiss them, and their ecumenical organizations, the National Council of Churches, World Council of Churches, just dismiss them as another kind of religionized form of politics. And that's one reason why they've fallen in such disrepair and become mere images of what they used to be. Now, conservative religious people can do the same thing, and you can wed conservative religion so much with conservative politics that you can't tell the difference between the two. And that's dangerous, not so much for the society because there's so many countervailing forces in society, but it's very dangerous for religion just to become one more political interest group. So that's what I mean by fusionism. There are all sorts of versions of fusionism, but those are the ones that are most relevant for us today.
Dr. Robert Benning is our guest. He's director of the Center for Religion and Society at Roanoke College and author of the new book titled Good and Bad Ways to Think About Religion and Politics. We're coming to you live this Thursday afternoon, the 24th of February. Your questions and comments are welcome. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. This break is a great time to call. You can email us as well, talkback@issuesetc.org, or send us a tweet at @issuesetc.
But politics, religion, and hurt. But politics, religion, and hurt.
Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Well, I think that's a very good question.
Check out our new YouTube video, Good Question, issuesetc.org, and click support. Good questions, better answers. Issues Etc. Watch the short YouTube video, Good Question, today. Just go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Well, you know, that's a good question.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
No, that's a good question.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking politics and religion with Dr. Robert Benning. He is director of the Center for Religion and Society at Roanoke College, and he's authored a new book titled good and bad ways to think about religion and politics. When you purchase Dr. Benet's book using the Amazon.com link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. IssuesETC.org. Click Listen on Demand and look for Good and Bad Ways to Think About Religion and Politics, a new book by Dr. Robert Benet. Dr. Benet, you say that we have to, when Christians engage in politics, when we enter the public square, we have to do it from the core. What do you mean by that?
Well, in the book, I try to lay out what I think the fundamental Christian core is. And first of all, Christianity is based upon a narrative, the biblical story. But then there's reflection on that biblical narrative that issues into what I call the Trinitarian faith. And then that's kind of the central core, the Trinitarian faith, which all Christians of an Orthodox sort hold to. I mean, there are different construals of it. Basically, it's pretty much the same and unchanging. But then there's the next level of out where you ask the question of what in that core is relevant to politics. And I try to take three principles that I derive from that core. One is the exalted nature of the human person, not because he or she has all this great worth, but because God has created us in his image and because Jesus has redeemed us. So humans have great value and worth, but humans are fallen. So you get that first principle is humans are sacred but fallen. Secondly, that there's a huge distinction between God's salvatory activity in Christ and what we can do on this earth. And the third principle that comes out of the core is Christian service. And from that core, then, you get social philosophies, you get political philosophy, you get social teachings of the church from that core. And unfortunately, most Protestants have amnesia. That is, every time they start a new church, they jettison their old teachings, and they don't have a long tradition of social teachings like the Catholic Church does, which has a long tradition of social teachings. And those social teachings then engage in new challenges, new items that they haven't thought about before. So they have to think through those and come to new assessments and judgments. And then on the furthest circle out is public policy, which is very specific, very difficult to craft, and full of compromises and conflict at the political level. So there are a whole bunch of concentric circles that come from that core that Christians traverse when they move to public policy. So that's what I meant by the core and how you move from the core in many different steps to the public policy. And as you make each one of those steps, Christians of goodwill and intelligence often disagree. So you have a lot of pluralism in Christian public policy. You don't have a lot of pluralism in the core where Orthodox Christians pretty much are on the same page.
Now, and we need to acknowledge historically, Dr. Benet, that Christians, especially in America, have sometimes taken a long time to apply, especially the moral principles here, to the facts of their political life, I think, especially about slavery. It took Christians of otherwise goodwill a long time to apply these core principles in public policy.
You're absolutely right, and it's something of a shame that Christianity that took Wilberforce and the English evangelicals to really get the ball rolling and then get the abolition forces going in America. But, you know, slavery had been pretty much abolished in Europe for many, many centuries, because if you look at the New Testament, all you got to see is when Paul says to, you know, treat your brother, the slave brother, as a brother in Christ, that should have been the end of slavery pretty quickly. But it took a long time for that core conviction about the sacrality of each individual human being. You can't own another human being. It took a long time for that to work out. You're absolutely right, and that's something of a shame for Christians.
We've talked about the what and the why. We haven't really discussed the how of this engagement. Mm-hmm. What is your best thinking there?
Well, my best thinking is that it's a kind of a dialectical process, and that we move across those different phases of the argument of public policy in a rather jagged way. And so we should be tolerant of each other's political opinions, but there are limits to that. There are limits on that. Some policies can be so outrageous that Christians should denounce them, like apartheid is a good example, or a certain kind of racist policies would be a good example. So there are certain policies that are so far beyond the pale that we should denounce them. But within those large limits, Christians come down in different places on public policy. So there isn't a Christian position even on the debate in Wisconsin, say. You know, there are Christians on both sides, and you wouldn't want to call a person unchristian who supported the unions in Wisconsin. On the other hand, you wouldn't want to say it's a Christian position to be with Governor Walker. So most Christians should be tolerant about those things, but I argue that there are three ones that kind of move from the core to the public policy that Christians should be fairly confident about. One is the sacrality of nascent life. They should be pro-life. A second one is that they should be very sensitive and work for public policies for the most vulnerable in our society, people who cannot make their way in the society. And a third one is the defense of religious freedom. And those three, I think, should make it all away from the court of public policy. But even then, you have the challenge of crafting public policy in a proper way. So that's the way I think it works, and there are intervening or conditioning factors that all of us are conditioned by as we move from the core to the public policy that affect us as well as the core.
Do you think that, again, speaking in the American context, the 21st century American context, that Christians have forfeited some of their credibility in the public square by arguing for things that are neither here nor there from the core, from our scriptural roots, mm-hmm. As though they were somehow a thus saith the Lord on tax policy or some of these other things?
Oh, yes. I've been chafing for many, many years as a member of the Evangelical Lutheran Church watching the Washington advocacy offices, which come down on many, many different public policies claiming to represent the ELCA people, when in fact they come down on the left-hand side of everything. So I just have utter disgust for what I call unintentional fusion or unintentional straight-line thinking. Those people in Washington, if you told them they had fused their religion with their politics, would be aghast, and they would claim they hadn't. But in effect, they do that. So if you look at the Episcopal Church, the Congregational Church, the ELCA, or the Methodists, they tend always to fall on the left-hand side of things, and they've diminished their moral capital by becoming so partisan.
Well, finally then, with only about a minute here, Dr. Bennett,
sure.
What is your best advice, given that politics will always be a series of compromises, sometimes moving us in the right direction, sometimes not, and mm-hmm. that there's never a perfect solution when it comes to public policy. What is your best advice for the Christian who wants to engage in healthy political discourse and activity?
Great question. Well, I think I'll answer it quickly on two ways. The church ought to be about getting those social teachings out there and conscientizing people, but letting the people make up their own minds. For the individual Christian, I'd say we have to be much more alert as citizens, being alert to the public sphere and the moral dimensions of public policy, but we also at the same time have to study our core far more than we have in recent years. Christians are basically unlettered in terms of the Bible and Christian teaching on these matters. And so we have two twin things to do: to pay attention to politics as Christian individuals, but also to learn much more about the core and what Christians have thought about these issues. So there's a lot of work, a lot of catechesis for the churches to do.
Dr. Robert Benny is director of the Center for Religion and Society at Roanoke College and author of a new book. It's titled Good and Bad Ways to Think About Religion and Politics. Dr. Benny, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. I always enjoy talking with you, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll play Issues Etc., soundbite of the week. That means we'll be busy putting together four soundbites for you to listen to, and then you get to listen and make your choice which of the four should be the Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. We have been placed in this world with a responsibility to our neighbor. We have been freed from all responsibility for ourselves and toward God by Jesus Christ, whose perfect life and obedience avails before God on our behalf. We do not need to worry about taking care of God, but we do worry about taking care of the neighbor. Now, we here in America have been tremendously blessed to be given a very flat and level road with which to do that, by which to find our neighbor and serve him, by which to protect him and speak for him, by which to provide for him when the need arises. We have been given, not the ideal, there is no ideal when it comes to human politics, but a very good and very useful tool, a toolbox of politics, if you will. We've been given the freedom to speak our mind in the ballot box or in the public square. We've been given the freedom to find our neighbor wherever he is in need. There is no shortage of opportunity here. Now, what Christians may need to realize is that we've been put here not for our own sakes, but for our neighbor's sake. That we vote not for our own sake, but for our neighbor. And that we are always serving our neighbor, whether we vote or argue or debate, but we can never sit it out because our neighbor needs us. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.